At InDigital, we know that public safety professionals hold themselves to a high standard. In fact, standard doesn't do it justice. In over 25 years working alongside you, carrying millions of calls over our IP networks, your dedication has inspired us. That's why our ESINet goes beyond industry standards, not only I3 compliant, but designed to adapt to future development for a network you can count on when it matters most. Learn more at InDigital.net.
Here in Greenville County, we have 8 different places where a 911 call can be answered.
It is the largest county in South Carolina. It's a challenge.
The type of information that a telecommunicator gets from Radius Plus is location-based technology. You can see where the caller is, if they have a medical issue, if they speak a different language. They're immediately able to text to that caller in their native language. It reduces response times because it immediately gets first responders where they need to be.
If Within the Trenches has ever taught you something, open your eyes to what it is like to be a 911 dispatcher, or has inspired you to become one, then help support us and join our Patreon. Get exclusive bonus content, one-of-a-kind swag, discounts on merchandise, ad-free early access to new episodes, and much more. To join, please visit patreon.com/WTTpodcast. And if you're an industry partner, we have something for you as well. And now, for the show.
This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning. This episode contains the 3 A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them. We are currently here live at the 2021 NINA conference. And a big shout out to Nina. Thank you so, so very much for presenting and hosting us once again. We're here in booth 1045. This episode is sponsored by InDigital as well as Rapid Deploy. And a shout out to patrons for everything. Thank you so, so very much. And I am excited. We've got a guest here with me. And I'm going to switch this over so that I have my notes in front of me. But my guest today is Sierra, and she is a senior regional communications officer. That's a lot.
It is a big title. Doesn't mean much, though. Just a dispatcher.
Oh, come on. No. And she is with the Idaho State Police. So welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yes. So this is going to be fun. I want to learn a lot more about you, but I want to ask really quick, is this your first national conference that you've been to?
Yes. This is my first one.
Oh, man. So how's the experience been for you so far?
It's been great. I've been having a great time. I love it. I won a sponsorship through the Kyle Plus Foundation.
Very nice. So
they brought me here, which I'm so thankful for, because I probably wouldn't have been able to without it. So it's been great. Everyone's been so friendly, and because I came alone. So
right.
I've had a great time.
So, you know, coming from where you're at and all, you know, there's a lot of resources, right? There's a lot of resources for dispatchers and call takers now. But coming to a conference like this, It's a whole different ballgame, right? You know, you've got the networking alone, you know, the people that you end up meeting, those who are, you know, maybe from the other side of the country.
Right.
And you end up finding out, well, they still have the same problems. Like, you know, they're dealing with the same stuff that we're dealing
absolutely.
with.
Absolutely. Everyone, I mean, we're all dispatchers, we're all call takers, we all work within it. And everyone has the same exact problems you do. It doesn't matter where you're from.
Right.
Yeah.
So how many years have you been in dispatch?
Four and a half years.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So how did you get involved to begin with?
Yeah. So it's in the family. My mom was a dispatch supervisor in California. She actually just retired this year. And my stepdad was a police officer.
Nice.
So I grew up with it. So I knew for a while I was going to be a dispatcher.
Oh, man. Okay. So growing up, as you say, you know, you knew that you were going to be getting into this. What were some of the things, I guess, that you experienced growing up?
I spent a lot of nights in the dispatch center.
Really?
Yeah. So.
Oh, man.
I mean, I'm only child, so either I would stay home alone or I would go with my mom at the center. I would either just plug in and listen to something. So I was hearing calls from when I was young, a teenager, hearing these calls. Yeah. So I just kind of knew that's always where I wanted to be. And because I expressed such an interest in it, my mom would take me more often than not. And then my stepdad would come home and tell me all these stories. And I knew I wanted to stay within the dispatch side. He never convinced me to come to that side of the road. But yeah, I just grew up with it and knew that's what was going to happen.
Holy cow. Okay, so going in there, if you can remember, like just thinking back, you know, reflecting on those times, you know, younger when you were first in there, what is that like for you? Like what, almost looking at it through, you know, childlike eyes, was it like, this is like NASA, you know, or something like what you're looking at, like this is crazy. This is all like space age or something. What was that like?
It was a lot. I mean, it's definitely busy. She was definitely in a busier center and it was just nonstop and fast paced and active. There was so much going on always at once. I couldn't keep, my 13-year-old self couldn't keep up with it. But it was just so interesting and so fun and fast paced and just boom, 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 boom. And I was like, this is where I want to be. It always interested me.
Oh man. So you got to sit in there for all that time, you know, listening to calls. I can only imagine. So when you're in there listening to calls, was it the umbilical cord basically?
Yep, a little bit. I would be actually plugged in, and then if my mom got up, I would check behind her. I'll follow along. They would change stations every 2 hours, so we'd pick up and follow the next station, and then pick up and go again. Yeah.
Oh, this is crazy. This is crazy. Then, so at 13, I mean, how are you processing, you know, some of these calls that you're listening to? Do you remember any of those calls from that time?
I don't. The only call I remember was from a ride along that I went on, that the subject ended up getting tased. But that was a ride along, so I don't really count it.
Yeah.
I don't remember anything from listening in, thankfully.
Yeah.
I don't think there was anything that bad that traumatized me or anything.
Yeah.
It didn't push me away. That's for sure.
Yeah, you've been doing this. Dang.
I guess luckily I didn't hear anything that I was like, ooh, she shouldn't have heard that.
Right, yeah.
She tried to keep me more on the dispatching side of things and less of the call-taking side of things. Gotcha. I think it was purposeful, honestly. So.
Right. Man, okay, so I want to go back really quick because you mentioned your ride-along where someone got tased.
Yeah, so first ride-along in her center and they go, here's your bulletproof vest. And I go, okay.
Nice.
Awesome. Okay. Yes. So we're driving around and a bolo comes out. I forget why, for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And this guy walked by who matched the bolo. And so the officer pulled up to him and was like, hey, can I talk to you? And the guy takes off. So we follow him and he like throws a gun out of his bag and we're following behind. And then he hopped a fence and the officer got out of the car and hopped the fence as well and ended up tasing him. He wasn't the guy we were looking for. He was wanted for a bigger charge. He just happened to match the description of the guy we happened to be looking for.
Yeah, what are the odds of that?
Yeah, because we probably want to talk to him if we weren't looking for someone who matched what he looked like. But yeah, that was fun. Spent hours in the hospital waiting for him to be cleared.
So this is at 13, right?
Around there.
Yeah. So, you know, you're sitting up front.
Yep.
And you're probably going lights and sirens, maybe. And so you even got to experience that.
Yes.
You know, sitting there and just going lights and sirens. The first ride along that I did, when we were going lights and sirens, it was an amazing moment, but also they didn't tell me to brace myself during that time.
Oh, no.
So I was like smashing to the side and the deputy is just laughing. And I was like, I guess I need to brace myself.
Yeah.
Over here. Like, oh yeah, I probably should.
That's funny.
Oh man. Yeah. So the ride along aspect was always something that, that I enjoyed.
Yeah.
One of the ride alongs I remember doing, it was flashbacking now. This is when I first started out dispatching in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And I was riding around with one of the city officers and there was this dance hall that was there in town and it was always bumping like around, you know, Saturday and Friday and stuff. And they call out for a fight. So we're hauling ass over their lights and sirens. And there are people that are walking. Everybody had dispersed.
Okay.
And but there is a security guy. And a security guard, rather, and a guy who's walking out who's just like struggling and he's holding on and he's trying to fight him off and stuff. And then there's another guy who's walking behind them who is just being calm, cool. He's completely fine. Well, as they walk by, and this is as we're pulling up, another security guard runs out, has this big-ass spray bottle of pepper spray.
Oh, no.
And gets in front of the guy who's doing nothing.
Oh, no.
And just sprays the hell out of his face.
Oh,
and
no.
He's covering his face, and he's yelling in Spanish, ay, Dios, ¿por qué, Dios, por qué? Which is translation, oh, God, why, God? And I was like,
oh, no.
This, so I hate laughing about it, but that was funny shit.
Yeah.
It was not something I was expecting. And the officer that was with me, she goes, why are you laughing? What did he yell? And I told her, and she's like, ah, I should not have asked you that, because now that's what I'm going to think when I walk up there to see what they're doing.
Yeah.
So yeah, those ride-alongs, man.
They're the best.
Yeah. Those are always fun. But you getting to experience that early on, like that's pretty awesome. But also that you ended up sticking with it as well. So around how old were you then when you ended up, I guess, like applying and being like, this is what I want to do?
Right. So I went to college. I moved to Boise for college. And then once I graduated, about 6 months later, I started applying and got in with ISP. And actually, I started in a different department at Idaho State Police. And then once they opened up the dispatcher position, I just slid right in, and there I was.
Oh, man.
Started 2 weeks later.
So you had all of this experience and everything, mm-hmm. Going in and stuff. And so what was the training like for you then when you ended up getting started?
Right. It was obviously hard because training's hard. Mm-hmm. But I knew the seriousness of it, and I knew how it wasn't just the job to me. It wasn't just they were hiring, so I applied. I knew what I was getting myself into. So yeah. I think that definitely helped.
Oh, man. So, I think one of the big things, too, that would have helped with all this process was the fact that your mom was there. That,
right.
That you talked about this, your stepdad, mm-hmm. Sharing these calls with you and mm-hmm. everything. Because you, and it probably helped for your mom as well to be able to, kind of talk to you because you were already experiencing
it.
So, if she ever shared any calls with you as well, mm-hmm. The both of you are talking.
Right. And you don't really understand it unless you're in it.
Right.
So being in it is definitely helpful.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good and bad thing she's in it because I could go with her to a problem. Sometimes she'll have the mom hat on and sometimes she'll have the supervisor hat on. And I'm like, I don't need to be lectured right now. I'm trying to vent to you.
Yes.
Like, she'll be like, oh, sorry. But you should really do this. And I'm like, okay, no. No. If I wanted your advice, then we'll go a different route. Right now, I'm just needing to bitch to you.
You're right. Yeah, exactly.
It's both a good and bad thing.
Yes. So what was, you said that, the training was hard and everything mm-hmm. else, but what went into that? Like, how long did it take? Because again, you had a certain amount of experience mm-hmm. already going in. So I can see where it would be a little bit easier for some of the concepts, some of the geo, mm-hmm. geography, all the other types of stuff to be able to learn and understand.
Right. Our training process is 3 months or so.
Uh-huh.
We only do police. We do not do fire or medical. One of the difficult parts for me was geography mm-hmm. because I had moved there for college and I only knew Boise. And since it was state police, I needed to know the entire state.
Right.
I didn't know anything past milepost 50. That was that. So that was really difficult for me. But just learn it. You either get it or you don't.
Was it overwhelming at all at any time
when
you were going through it?
Yeah, absolutely. It was definitely those days that I'm like, okay, this is not worth it. I'm not going to get it.
Yeah.
I'm still not getting it after how many more days. So, but I think just having that support system behind me, knowing that I could do it and knowing there's other options if I didn't get it, that definitely helped me through.
That's good. And that's what I was going to ask, how did you continue going mm-hmm. through it, even having those feelings, but having a good support group,
you know?
And having your mom there as well to mm-hmm. be able to talk about all of that.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in dispatch, I was training. And there was a point where I wanted to quit as well, because when I got in there and I didn't understand how they did their training and they really didn't explain either.
Yeah. But you just show up and hope for the best.
Yeah, exactly. But I got in there and I was with my trainer, of course, mm-hmm. but what I thought was going to happen was that, we were going to be working like a team already.
Okay.
And so for a few months, that team aspect and all wasn't there.
Mm.
And I remember thinking, how the hell are we going to work like a team? Like, how are we going to do this? Like,
right.
I don't even feel like this is a team type thing. I don't know that I want to do this.
Right.
and a friend of mine who I actually grew up with, we went to school together, childhood friends and stuff. We ended up working together in dispatch.
Oh.
I told her, I said, I don't think I'm going to do this. I was like, this kind of sucks. And she goes, why? And I said, and then I explained to her, and she goes, this is just the way that they do it. Once you get to the third phase or the fourth phase, it's the shadow phase. Your trainer moves away, and then we all work like a team. Hmm. And I remember telling her, I was like, you guys need to change this up a little bit, because I come in here, you know, that camaraderie that you want to start building, you know, right away with some of those newer people, it wasn't there.
Right.
But I guess there are, and this is stuff that I've heard, it's not like this everywhere, but there are some centers where, you know, sometimes a lot of people, they don't end up learning, you know, certain people's names or whatever until they get to through a certain aspect of training. I'm like, why?
That's like, so why weird.
Right. Like, why wouldn't you want them to stay?
Right.
You know?
Yeah. So I just became a trainer, and like one of the daily observation scores is relationship with coworkers. Mm-hmm. They have to learn their names. They have to learn about them. And even like in the later phases, it's like, hey, trainer, can I take a break? I don't know. Ask your partner, like build a relationship with your partner.
Yeah.
Like, and they should be asking them for a break so they can learn how to do all this stuff and be a team.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't get why.
Yeah, so that is a good thing right there. Mm-hmm. For any of you who are watching or listening, you can take some pointers as well, because that's a cool thing to be able to do that. Do you remember like any of your, you know, when you're in there now, you're going through your training.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember any of those earlier calls? Because so, like you were saying, you only do police. Mm-hmm. When I was in dispatch, I did all disciplines of public safety.
Right.
And there was just so many different things that went into that. But, you know, all those police calls and then working on radio.
Mm-hmm.
Before I asked you about your call, working radios, how much do you enjoy that?
I enjoy it more than call taking.
I was just going to ask, which one do you like more?
I enjoy it more than call taking.
And why is that?
I think I say this nicely.
Yeah.
I think it's because I have that relationship with the troopers and I know them.
Yes.
So we're coworkers. Mm-hmm. So we have that bond already. And if there's a problem, we can talk about it. With call taking, it's just call, 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 call. Next person, next person, next person. There's you build that rapport within that couple of minutes, but then it's gone and it's done. I really got into dispatching because obviously I want to make a difference and all that, but I wanted to make sure the officers got home safe. That's my big thing. So I like doing the radio because I like being in control of making sure they know where they're at. They're not with the wanted subject that they're code for.
Nice.
So that's why I like working the radio more.
Excellent. Yeah. I enjoyed phones, but radio was always so much fun, especially when there was nothing really that was going on. So we would have fun on the radio.
Absolutely.
And
that's what night shifts for, right?
Yes, exactly. It'd be like 3 a.m. Nothing's really going on.
Yeah.
And
sorry, supervisor.
Yeah.
Don't review my calls.
One deputy started this and then everyone started doing it afterwards, but for whatever, and I don't even know why he did it. But he did some traffic over the radio, and then he stayed with his mic open, and then he just goes, and I sent him a message. I was like, did you sniff? And he goes, yeah, man, that's my thing now. I was like,
what?
Okay. So it sounds so stupid, but it was so hilarious because we had our city officers, we had our troopers, and then we had all of our deputies. And the deputies and troopers would go back and forth on different things, and a trooper would say something over the radio,
mm-hmm.
and then a deputy would come over on like a secondary channel and just go,
oh no.
Like I said, it's so stupid, but it was funny.
Yeah.
So they would clear from a call. So just as an example, like K-91 Central, I'll be 1024 and like 10-4. Or we would do, have you ever seen the movie Saving Silverman?
I don't think so.
Okay, so there's a scene in that movie. Mm-hmm. It, you can find the clip on YouTube. And Jack Black has a little walkie-talkie.
Okay.
And when you hit the button, it makes a sound. And he's hitting the button, and or he's going and then hitting the button. and the other guy who's in the scene, he goes, you don't have to do the part. It does the part for you. So we would be on radio, and I would key up, and you know, I would just and then do my thing. So we would do that.
No.
That and, you know, like meow. You know, we'd do the meow thing. So there was a lot of times that we would have fun. Yeah. But also, I love a good chase on the radio.
Yeah.
Something about those. Well, of course, when you know, nothing crazy is going on. Right. Yeah. But
it's that one in custody that you're like,
yes.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why I keep coming back.
That's right. Yeah. Yes. That always, you know, that I guess kind of that adrenaline rush, you know, as well that goes into it. So, that makes sense. You know, wanting to do that as well over taking the phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, you know, also, what have you found maybe, you know, more, I guess, difficult in a way on phone calls versus radios?
So in our department, we do call taking and dispatching at the exact same time. So we're taking the phone calls. We're taking the emergency calls while at the same time we're dispatching calls.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. So I think where I struggle is because sometimes I can't give the caller my 110%.
Right.
Because the trooper is checking out on a traffic stop. And now my attention has to switch.
Right.
And it just goes back and forth. So when it's not busy and I can give these callers the amazing customer service, that's when I feel better. But when it's like, okay, hold on 1 second. Hold on one more second for me. One more second for me.
Yes.
So exactly. I think that's why I like the radio side of it more, because they have my full attention. I need to make sure that they're cut for where they're at. I think that's why I lean more towards that.
Is there ever a point where you're just simply doing radios? Or is it phone and
it's
radios?
Always both.
It's always both. Okay.
So
damn.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a hard thing.
It's
because
hard.
So I was gonna ask, do you get to yell over and say, hey, you know, I've got this going on, but you don't because you're doing both.
Right. I mean, sometimes like if you're busy on your station and you could tell someone else is not, I could put the call on hold and be like, can you finish that call for me? So
okay.
It's definitely a team environment of most of it's in, I just need this one thing, or can you take this call for me? Can you run this person for me? Something like that.
How many people are working at a time?
We have five at a time. We have four districts, and then one of the districts, the Boise area, since it's so busy, it's split into two dispatches.
So how does that chaos sound?
Sometimes it's insane. I walked in the other day and every single person was on the phone. There was three phone calls on hold and I saw everyone's blue light on, which means the radio was on as well. And I went, is it too late to call in sick? It's been insane.
Oh, geez.
So
I can't even imagine, because, you know, I remember being in dispatch. So on one side, it was main phones and two consoles dedicated to phones.
Mm-hmm.
And then this console up front was our supervisor console. And then on the other side, we had main law enforcement radios.
Okay.
And then we had what was called lean.
Mm-hmm.
And in Michigan, that's what they call like the NCIC lookup and all that. So it's the lean desk.
Okay.
But it's also not only you're running that stuff, but you're also backup phones and backup radio.
Okay.
So you've got all of that going on. And sometimes it would go to hell in there.
Yeah.
And it's actually how I came up with the name for this podcast, Within the Trenches, because I remember there was some crazy shit that was going on, and it was so nuts. I had just a few seconds to take it in. And I remember sitting up and looking at everything that was going on and listening to it. And I thought, man, I'm like, this is like a war zone. It seems like I feel like I'm within the trenches of like 911.
Yeah.
And I remember keeping that. I was like, I think I like that name. Because I was starting to
jot that down.
I was starting to blog about all these calls and stuff, so I ended up keeping it. But why I asked, because there's three to four of us doing all different disciplines,
right?
But there's a dedicated law enforcement radio person. However, on your end, you're doing the call and the radio all at the same time, and I can only imagine too that it's hard to keep kind of that rapport with the caller, because they're calling you in their time of need, but you also are having to put them on hold and stuff.
Right.
And I always remember someone who would call in and they would say, I called 911. Why are you putting me on hold?
Right.
And there was one time that I actually said to somebody, Sir, your emergency isn't the only emergency. Like, 911 doesn't stop.
Right.
Everything is going on. He was calling about like a barking dog or right. trespassing or something. And I said to him, I had to put someone on hold for, what the heck, blew on my glasses, for CPR uh-huh. and to get your call. So I need to go back to that one. And he's like, oh, okay.
They don't realize it.
All right.
Yeah, because their emergency is the emergency.
Yeah.
But it's not just them. But.
Right. Yeah, there's so much more that's going right. on. So, you know, along with that, you know, you got when someone calls in, depending on, you know, like your tone, you know, especially if that's the first time that they're calling,
yep.
that might be the last time they call, right. depending on, you know, the person that they end up getting. So, yeah, I can't even imagine the struggle of taking the call,
mm-hmm.
but also having to say, okay, hold on a minute. It, like, just like you were saying, mm-hmm. I got to do the radio and all this other mm-hmm. stuff.
Our troopers are really good with if we're like standby one, finishing a 911 or something like that.
Yeah.
Most of the time they're really good at just standby waiting a second because they know that. And the other thing is, we're all of Idaho.
Yeah.
So I may be working the Boise area, but mm-hmm. I may be taking a phone call for Idaho Falls, which is 6 hours away.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's 6 hours. It's like That's 6 hours away.
Way.
So even if we're like standby one for emergency, it may not even be in the district. It may be somewhere completely somewhere else.
Wow.
So.
Okay. So before I ask you this about your first call that you remember, then with that type of drive time, like, do you stay on the line a long time then with some of the callers?
No. Or? So we have different troopers working different areas.
Oh, okay. So
we have
the districts and everything.
Yeah, we have different
saying.
Districts,
okay,
and
great.
Then they
yeah.
work only their district. So.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. That makes,
I mean,
that makes more sense.
There is the middle of nowhere, Idaho, that does take longer.
Yeah.
We usually don't say it. We're not. If you call 911, you do not get us. We're secondary.
Oh.
So.
Okay. I got you now.
That
okay.
helps a little.
Right, right, right. Yeah, yeah. That definitely yeah. does help. So going into, you know, everything that you were doing, you know, I guess if you remember, you know, some of your, you know, maybe your first call or an earlier call mm-hmm. or even one that, you know, just kind of really sticks with you.
My biggest call that I got, like when I first started, it was yeah. after training. So I was on my own and I was working what we call the primary station of Boise. So that they run all the traffic stops through there. That's where you broadcast the calls. It's mainly the main radio station.
Yeah.
The radio channel. And it was about 10 o'clock on a Saturday night. All the troopers were at dinner. They were all gearing up to do their DUI stuff that night because it's Saturday night. And we get this call of a semi had crashed into another semi underneath an overpass, and the overpass was collapsing.
Oh, geez.
So we're like, okay. And there's multiple explosions. So we're like, okay, okay. So I'm about to tone it out. We have cameras in our station that shows all the roads of Idaho. And I can hear my partner across the room going, and I turn around, and we just see the explosions on the camera. So I tone it out. I use the marker tones. I put it out as an unknown injury, multiple semis, multiple explosions. Silence. And I'm like, did I not hit the pedal? What's going on?
Yeah.
And then I get a copy. We're clearing from dinner. We'll be now. Okay. I don't think you're understanding what's going on, but okay.
Right, right.
Later on, I found out they're like, when we hear explosions, we think it's just tires popping. But like, not this time. Not this time.
Yeah.
So we get there, and people are calling in. You can see the fires. The semi-truck's on fire. Everything is exploding. Overpass is coming down. The trooper gets on scene and goes, "Control, there's a fire here."
Oh, no.
Yes. What happened was the semi-truck was stopped for construction, a car was stopped behind it, and another semi-truck did not slow down. So then they combined, and the two semis exploded.
What?
So four fatalities. Interstate was closed for almost a full day, like the whole interstate. Overpass, it didn't come down completely, but chunks started to come down. A piece of it actually hit a fire on scene. And so the overpass was closed, and yeah, it was my biggest fatality crash I've ever had. Four fatals.
Jeez. So yeah. and on top of that, you know, you all saw that.
Yes.
You saw all of that go down.
Yes.
While I mean, so what was that even like for you?
It was really hard. The hardest part. So this was my biggest crash. I was probably out of training for about 5 months at this point.
Oh man! So
and
you're yeah.
Yes, I'm still
baby dispatcher.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Still don't really know what's going on.
Yes.
I think the hardest part for at least me and the rest of my team was it took them almost 2 weeks, a week, to figure out who had actually died because there was nothing left of them.
Wow.
So that was really hard because, and then we had people kept calling in like, hey, we hadn't heard from my son. Do you know who was involved in that crash? And we tell them, no, we don't. And we just had like this list of people we had to call and figure out like, could it be this person? And so that was definitely the most difficult part of it. But
yeah, that's it's hard, right? When you end up having to be the one to make a specific notification,
right?
And because you know, if you're calling a family member,
mm-hmm.
you don't want to say something that will end up creating more victims.
Right.
Right. I remember a call where this husband and wife, they were separated, and he went to go check on, he had already moved out. He went to go check on her and had found her. She committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on the line with him, and he's just crying and crying. And I said, is there anybody that you want me to call for you?
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted me to call his daughter, and I called and I told her, I said, you need to contact your dad. And she goes, wait, you're with who? And I said, oh, I'm mm-hmm. with Allegan 911. I'm with dispatch. And she goes, okay, wait, what is going on?
Right.
And I said, I don't have all the information, which I did, but I
right.
said, I don't have all the information or anything. You just need to call him
yep.
and go from there. She goes, okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
But it sucks because when you're in that position, you're straight up lying to them because
yeah.
you have the information,
yep.
but
you know exactly
can't
who
say
it is. Yeah.
because if they get in the car and start hauling ass
yep.
and they crash,
yep.
do you want that burden?
No. Yeah. It's definitely hard and definitely have to play dumb sometimes, but
yeah,
it's for the best.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. What, as you reflect on these 4 years that you've
mm-hmm.
been doing this, you know, what is, I guess, what is something that you've been most grateful for, I guess, in this profession?
I mean, I guess I would say I always have a support system behind me, not
yeah.
just my family, but I think I could go back to any of these people and just talk if I need to.
Yeah.
Just definitely have that family that they talk about. You don't know unless you're in this job what it actually feels like.
Yeah.
So having that support system and having that those people that you can talk to is what I'm very grateful for.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It has been awesome to have you on
yes,
and to talk
you.
To you and learn more. There is one more thing that I want to ask you here
sure.
before we go into the wrap up of this. Now, you said that you became a trainer as well, right?
Yes.
So what was it that was, I guess, motivation to do that? Because so a lot of people that I've talked to, when they've moved up to be, a trainer
mm-hmm.
or, deputy director or director supervisor, whichever,
mm-hmm.
is because there's something that happened to them, whether it was the training that they received,
mm-hmm.
Good or bad, where they wanted to be able to mold that next generation of 911 coming in, or maybe even, just like an incident or a call, something that happened. What was it for you? What was your motivation to go into training
mm-hmm.
as well?
I had great trainers. I had 3 different trainers. They were all so different, but they were all great. I learned so much from each of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew I wanted to be that same mentor that they were to me. And so I started training and I liked it. It was great. And then you just see them one day just get it and it just clicks for them. I was a part of that. So
that
it's definitely it's what keeps me going.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is excellent. So as we go into the wrap up of this episode, for anyone who's thinking about coming to a conference like this, I guess what would you say to someone who is kind of on the fence?
I say just do it. I mean, I'm here alone and I'm excited, but I was terrified.
Yeah.
You meet so many people. You're never alone. You're never excluded of anything. I've learned so much and it's only day 1.5.
Yeah.
So so much to do. I mean, worst case scenario, it was just 3 days. If you hated it, it was just 3 days.
Right.
Go back and just don't do it again. Someone else can take your spot. But
exactly.
I think it's great. It was completely worth it. There's scholarships out there. There's sponsorships out there. Just have to look for them. And there's a will, there's a way.
For sure. Is there anything that you have experienced here, like class-wise already, you know, something that you're kind of excited to take back?
I went to the Shots Fired PTSD class yesterday. That one was great. She showed us this handout, I guess you could say, of how you deal with stress and how you want to deal with stress after an incident. And she said, fill this out before the stress happens so we know how to take care of you. And I just thought this would be great for my trainees to fill this out with them and be like, you don't need this now. You may not need this till 3 years from now, but when you need it, it'll be a great resource to have so we can help you.
Awesome.
I thought that was great.
Excellent. Well, again, thank you so very much for being on and sharing your story and your experience here. It has been awesome. And it's just been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I've had a great time.
Awesome. For those who are watching and listening, if you have any comments, questions, or you want to be a guest on the show, you can email us, and that's going to be WTTpodcast@gmail.com. Once again, that is WTTpodcast@gmail.com. If you want any bonus content, you can check us out, and that's going to be patreon.com/WTTpodcast. You can follow us on Twitter. That is @91podcast. You can like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/WithinTheTrenchesPodcast. A big shout out once again to Nina for hosting us. It has been an amazing time, and we're here for a few more hours, and we've got a lot of episodes that are going to be going out there. So thank you so very much to Nina once again. This episode has been sponsored by InDigital as well as Rapid Deploy, and you can see this on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook. You can also listen 24/7 on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, your favorite podcasting app, and withinthetrenches.net. Have a good one, everyone. We'll see you in the next one.